So you don't know anything which might be a clue? And she said, no. And then she said, you be careful, young man. I said that I would be careful, and then I said thank you to her for helping me with my questions, and I went to number 43, which is the house next to Mrs. Shear's house. The people who live at number 43 are Mr. Wise and Mr. Wise's mother, who's in a wheelchair, which is why he lives with her, so he can take her to the shops and drive her around. It was Mr. Wise who answered the door. He smelt of body odour and old biscuits and off popcorn, which is what you smell of if you haven't washed for a very long time, like Jason at school smells, because his family's poor. I asked Mr. Wise if he knew who had killed Wellington on Thursday night. He said, bloody hell, policemen really are getting younger, aren't they? Then he laughed. I don't like people laughing at me, so I turned and walked away. I didn't knock at the door of number 38, which is the house next to our house, because the people there take drugs, and Father says that I should never talk to them, so I don't. And they play loud music at night, and they make me scared sometimes when I see them in the street, and it's not really their house. Then I noticed that the old lady who lives at number 39, which is on the other side of Mrs. Shear's house, was in her front garden, cutting her hedge with an electric hedge trimmer. Her name is Mrs. Alexander. She has a dog. It's a dachshund, so she was probably a good person because she liked dogs. But the dog wasn't in the garden with her. It was inside the house. Mrs. Alexander was wearing jeans and training shoes, which old people don't normally wear. And there was mud on the jeans, and the trainers were New Balance trainers, and the laces were red. I went up to Mrs. Alexander and said, do you know anything about Wellington being killed? Then she turned off the electric hedge trimmer and said, I'm afraid you're going to have to say that again. I'm a little deaf. So I said, do you know anything about Wellington being killed? And she said, I heard about it yesterday. Dreadful, dreadful. I said, do you know who killed him? And she said, no, I don't. I replied, somebody must know, because the person who killed Wellington knows that they killed Wellington, unless they were a mad person and didn't know what they were doing, or unless they had amnesia. And she said, well, I suppose you're probably right. I said, thank you for helping me with my investigation. And she said, you're Christopher, aren't you? I said, yes, I live at number 36. And she said, we haven't talked before, have we? I said, no, I don't like talking to strangers, but I'm doing detective work. And she said, I see you every day going to school. I didn't reply to this. And she said, it's very nice of you to come and say hello. I didn't reply to this either, because Mrs. Alexander was doing what is called chatting, where people say things to each other which aren't questions and answers and aren't connected. Then she said, even if it's only because you're doing detective work. And I said, thank you, again. And I was about to turn and walk away when she said, I have a grandson your age. I tried to do chatting by saying, my age is 15 years and 3 months and 3 days. And she said, well, almost your age. Then we said nothing for a little while, until she said, you don't have a dog, do you? And I said, no. And she said, you'd probably like a dog, wouldn't you? And I said, I have a rat. And she said, a rat? And I said, he's called Toby. And she said, oh. And I said, most people don't like rats because they think they carry diseases like bubonic plague, but that's only because they live in sewers and stowed away on ships coming from foreign countries where there were strange diseases. But rats are very clean. Toby is always washing himself. And you don't have to take him out for walks. I just let him run around my room so he gets some exercise. And sometimes he sits on my shoulder or hides in my sleeve like it's a burrow, but rats don't live in burrows in nature. Mrs. Alexander said, do you want to come in for tea? And I said, I don't go into other people's houses. And she said, well, Maybe I could bring some out here. Do you like lemon squash? I replied, I only like orange squash. And she said, luckily I have some of that as well. And what about Battenberg? And I said, I don't know, because I don't know what Battenberg is. She said, it's a kind of cake. It has four pink and yellow squares in the middle, and it has marzipan icing round the edge. And I said, is it a long cake with a square cross-section which is divided into equally sized, alternately coloured squares? And she said, yes, I think you could probably describe it like that. And I said, I think I'd like the pink squares, but not the yellow squares, because I don't like yellow. And I don't know what marzipan is, so I don't know whether I'd like that. And she said, I'm afraid marzipan is yellow too. Perhaps I should bring out some biscuits instead. Do you like biscuits? And I said, yes, some sorts of biscuits. And she said, I'll get a selection. Then she turned and went into the house. She moved very slowly because she was an old lady, and she was inside the house for more than 6 minutes, and I began to get nervous because I didn't know what she was doing in the house. I didn't know her well enough to know whether she was telling the truth about getting orange squash and Battenberg cake, and I thought she might be ringing the police, and then I'd get into much more serious trouble because of the caution. So I walked away. And as I was crossing the street, I had a stroke of inspiration about who might have killed Wellington. I was imagining a chain of reasoning inside my head, which was like this. 1. Why would you kill a dog? A. Because you hated the dog. B. Because you were mad. C. Because you wanted to make Mrs. Shears upset. 2. I didn't know anyone who hated Wellington, so if it was A, it was probably a stranger. 3. I didn't know any mad people, so if it was B, it was also probably a stranger. 4. Most murders are committed by someone who is known to the victim. In fact, you're most likely to be murdered by a member of your own family on Christmas Day. This is a fact. Wellington was therefore most likely to have been killed by someone known to him. 5. If it was C, I only knew one person who didn't like Mrs. Shears, and that was Mr. Shears, who knew Wellington very well indeed. This meant that Mr. Shears was my prime suspect. Mr. Shears used to be married to Mrs. Shears, and they lived together until 2 years ago. Then Mr. Shears left and didn't come back. This was why Mrs. Shears came over and did lots of cooking for us after Mother died, because she didn't have to cook for Mr. Shears anymore, and she didn't have to stay at home and be his wife. And also, Father said that she needed company and didn't want to be on her own. And sometimes Mrs. Shears stayed overnight at our house, and I liked it when she did, because she made things tidy, and she arranged the jars and pans and tins in order of their height on the shelves in the kitchen, and she always made their labels face outwards, and she put the knives and forks and spoons in the correct compartments in the cutlery drawer. But she smoked cigarettes, and she said lots of things I didn't understand. For example, I'm going to hit the hay, and it's brass monkeys out there, and let's rustle up some tucker. And I didn't like it when she said things like that, because I didn't know what she meant. And I don't know why Mr. Shears left Mrs. Shears, because nobody told me. But when you get married, it's because you want to live together and have children. And if you get married in a church, you have to promise that you'll stay together until death do us part. And if you don't want to live together, you have to get divorced. And this is because one of you has done sex with somebody else, or because you're having arguments and you hate each other and you don't want to live in the same house anymore and have children. And Mr. Shears didn't want to live in the same house as Mrs. Shears anymore, so he probably hated her, and he might have come back and killed her dog to make her sad. I decided to try and find out more about Mr. Shears. Chapter 71. All the other children at my school are stupid. Except that I'm not meant to call them stupid, even though this is what they are. I'm meant to say that they have learning difficulties, or that they have special needs. But this is stupid, because everyone has learning difficulties, because learning to speak French or understanding relativity is difficult. And also, everyone has special needs, like Father, who has to carry a little packet of artificial sweetening tablets around with him to put in his coffee to stop him getting fat. Or Mrs. Peters, who wears a beige-coloured hearing aid. Or Siobhan, who has glasses so thick that they give you a headache if you borrow them. And none of these people are special needs, even if they have special needs. But Siobhan said we have to use those words, because people used to call children like the children at school spaz and crip and mong, which were nasty words. But that's stupid too, because sometimes the children from the school down the road see us in the street when we're getting off the bus and they shout, "Special needs, special needs!" But I don't take any notice, because I don't listen to what other people say, and only sticks and stones can break my bones, and I have my Swiss Army knife. If they hit me, and if I kill them, it will be self-defence, and I won't go to prison. I am going to prove that I'm not stupid. Next month, I'm going to take my A level in maths, and I'm going to get an A grade. No one has ever taken an A level at our school before, and the headmistress, Mrs. Gascoigne, didn't want me to take it at first. She said they didn't have the facilities to let us sit A levels, but Father had an argument with Mrs. Gascoigne, and he got really cross. Mrs. Gascoigne said they didn't want to treat me differently from everyone else in school, because then everyone would want to be treated differently, and it would set a precedent. And I could always do my A-levels later, at 18. I was sitting in Mrs. Gascoigne's office with Father when she said these things, and Father said, "Christopher is getting a crap enough deal already, don't you think? Without you shitting on him from a great height as well. Jesus, this is the only thing he's really good at!" Then Mrs. Gascoigne said that she and Father should talk about this at some later point on their own. But Father asked her whether she wanted to say things she was embarrassed to say in front of me, and she said no. So he said, "Say them now, then." And she said that if I sat an A-level, I would have to have a member of staff looking after me on my own in a separate room. And Father said he'd pay someone £50 to do it after school, and he wasn't going to take no for an answer. And she said she'd go away and think about it. And the next week she rang Father at home and told him that I could take the A-level and the Reverend Peters would be what is called the invigilator. And after I've taken A-level maths, I'm going to take A-level further maths and physics, and then I can go to university. There's not a university in our town, which is Swindon, because it's a small place. So we'll have to move to another town where there is a university, because I don't want to live on my own, or in a house with other students. But that'll be all right, because Father wants to move to a different town as well. He sometimes says things like, "We've got to get out of this town, kiddo." And sometimes he says, "Swindon is the arsehole of the world." Then, when I've got a degree in maths or physics, or maths and physics, I'll be able to get a job and earn lots of money, and I'll be able to pay someone who can look after me and cook my meals and wash my clothes. Or I'll get a lady to marry me and be my wife, and she can look after me so I can have company and not be on my own.
This ends Disc 1. The Curious Incident of the Dog in the Nighttime, Disc 2.
Chapter 73. I used to think that Mother and Father might get divorced. That was because they had lots of arguments, and sometimes they hated each other. This was because of the stress of looking after someone who has behavioural problems, like I have. I used to have lots of behavioural problems, but I don't have so many now because I'm more grown up and I can take decisions for myself and do things on my own, like going out of the house and buying things at the shop at the end of the road. These are some of my behavioural problems. A. Not talking to people for a long time. Once I didn't talk to anyone for 5 weeks. B. Not eating or drinking anything for a long time. When I was six, Mother used to get me to drink strawberry-flavoured slimming meals out of a measuring jug, and we'd have competitions to see how fast I could drink a quarter of a litre. C. Not liking being touched. D. Screaming when I'm angry or confused. E. Not liking being in really small places with other people. F. Smashing things when I'm angry or confused. G. Groaning. H. Not liking yellow things or brown things and refusing to touch yellow things or brown things. I. Refusing to use my toothbrush if anyone else has touched it. J. Not eating food if different sorts of food are touching each other. K. Not noticing that people are angry with me. L. Not smiling. M. Saying things that other people think are rude. People say that you always have to tell the truth, but they do not mean this, because you're not allowed to tell old people that they're old, and you're not allowed to tell people if they smell funny or if a grown-up has made a fart. And you're not allowed to say, "I don't like you," unless that person has been horrible to you. N. Doing stupid things. Stupid things are things like emptying a jar of peanut butter onto the table in the kitchen and making it level with a knife so that it covers all the table right to the edges, or burning things on the gas stove to see what will happen to them, like my shoes, or silver foil, or sugar. O. Hitting other people. P. Hating France. Q. Driving Mother's car. I only did this once by borrowing the keys when she went into town on the bus, and I hadn't driven a car before, and I was 8 years old and 5 months, so I drove it into the wall, and the car isn't there anymore because Mother's dead. R. Getting cross when someone has moved the furniture. It is permitted to move the chairs and the table in the kitchen, because that's different, but it makes me feel dizzy and sick if someone has moved the sofa and the chairs around in the living room or the dining room. Mother used to do this when she did the hoovering, so I made a special plan of where all the furniture's meant to be and did measurements, and I put everything back in its proper place afterwards, and then I felt better. But since Mother died, Father hasn't done any hoovering, so that's okay. And Mrs. Shears did the hoovering once, but I did groaning, and she shouted at Father, and she never did it again. Sometimes, these things would make Mother and Father really angry, and they'd shout at me, or they'd shout at each other. Sometimes, Father would say, "Christopher, if you do not behave, I swear I shall knock the living daylights out of you." Or Mother would say, "Jesus, Christopher, I'm seriously considering putting you in a home." Or Mother would say, "You are going to drive me into an early grave." Chapter 79. When I got home, Father was sitting at the table in the kitchen, and he had made my supper. He was wearing a lumberjack shirt. The supper was baked beans and broccoli and two slices of ham, and they were laid out on the plate so that they weren't touching. He said, "Where have you been?" And I said, "I've been out." This is called a white lie. A white lie is not a lie at all. It's where you tell the truth, but you don't tell all of the truth. This means that everything you say is a white lie. Because when someone says, for example, "What do you want to do today?" you say, "I want to do painting with Mrs. Peters." But you don't say, "I want to have my lunch, and I want to go to the toilet, and I want to go home after school, and I want to play with Toby, and I want to have my supper, and I want to play on my computer, and I want to go to bed." And I said a white lie because I knew that Father didn't want me to be a detective. Father said, "I've just had a phone call from Mrs. Shears." I started eating my baked beans and broccoli and two slices of ham. Then Father asked, "What the hell were you doing poking round her garden?" I said, "I was doing detective work trying to find out who killed Wellington." Father replied, "How many times do I have to tell you, Christopher?" The baked beans and the broccoli and the ham were cold, but I didn't mind this. I eat very slowly, so my food is nearly always cold. Father said, "I told you to keep your nose out of other people's business." I said, "I think Mr. Shears probably killed Wellington." Father didn't say anything. I said, "He's my prime suspect, because I think someone might have killed Wellington to make Mrs. Shears sad, and a murder is usually committed by someone known..." Father banged the table with his fist really hard, so that the plates and his knife and fork jumped around, and my ham jumped sideways so that it touched the broccoli, so I couldn't eat the ham or the broccoli anymore. Then he shouted, "I will not have that man's name mentioned in my house." I asked, "Why not?" And he said, "That man is evil." And I said, "Does that mean he might have killed Wellington?" Father put his head in his hands and said, "Jesus wept." I could see that Father was angry with me, so I said, "I know you told me not to get involved in other people's business, but Mrs. Shears is a friend of ours." And Father said, "Well, she's not a friend anymore." And I asked, "Why not?" And Father said, "Okay, Christopher, I am going to say this for the last and final time. I will not tell you again. Look at me when I'm talking to you, for God's sake. Look at me. You are not to go asking Mrs. Shears about who killed that bloody dog. You are not to go asking anyone about who killed that bloody dog. You are not to go trespassing in other people's gardens. You are to stop this ridiculous bloody detective game right now." I didn't say anything. Father said, "I'm going to make you promise, Christopher, and you know what it means when I make you promise." I did know what it meant when you say you promise something. You have to say that you will never do something again, and then you must never do it, because that would make the promise a lie. I said, "I know." Father said, "Promise me you will stop doing these things. Promise me that you will give up this ridiculous game right now. Okay?" I said, "I promise." Chapter 83. I think I would make a very good astronaut. To be a good astronaut, you have to be intelligent, and I'm intelligent. You also have to understand how machines work, and I'm good at understanding how machines work. You also have to be someone who would like being on their own in a tiny spacecraft thousands and thousands of miles away from the surface of the Earth and not panic or get claustrophobia or homesick or insane. And I really like little spaces, so long as there's no one else in them with me. Sometimes, when I want to be on my own, I get into the airing cupboard in the bathroom and slide in beside the boiler and pull the door closed behind me and sit there and think for hours, and it makes me feel very calm. So I would have to be an astronaut on my own, or have my own part of the spacecraft which no one else could come into. And also, there are no yellow things or brown things in a spacecraft, so that would be okay too. And I would have to talk to other people from Mission Control, but we'd do that through a radio link-up and a TV monitor, so they wouldn't be like real people who are strangers, but it would be like playing a computer game. And I wouldn't be homesick at all, because I'd be surrounded by lots of the things I like, which are machines and computers and outer space. And I'd be able to look out of a little window in the spacecraft and know that there was no one else near me for thousands and thousands of miles, which is what I sometimes pretend at night in the summer when I go and lie on the lawn and look up at the sky and I put my hands round the sides of my face so that I can't see the fence and the chimney and the washing line and I can pretend I'm in space. And all I could see would be stars. And stars are the places where the molecules that life is made of were constructed billions of years ago. For example, All the iron in your blood, which stops you being anemic, was made in a star. And I would like it if I could take Toby with me into space, and that might be allowed, because they sometimes do take animals into space for experiments. So if I could think of a good experiment you could do with a rat that didn't hurt the rat, I could make them let me take Toby. But if they didn't let me, I'd still go, because it would be a dream come true. Chapter 89. The next day at school, I told Siobhan that Father had told me I couldn't do any more detecting, which meant that the book was finished. I showed her the pages I had written so far, with the diagram of the universe and the map of the street and the prime numbers, and she said that it didn't matter. She said the book was really good as it was, and that I should be very proud of having written a book at all, even if it was quite short. And there were some very good books which were very short, like Heart of Darkness, which was by Conrad. But I said that it wasn't a proper book because it didn't have a proper ending, because I never found out who killed Wellington, so the murderer was still at large. And she said that was like life, and not all murders were solved and not all murderers were caught, like Jack the Ripper. I said I didn't like the idea that the murderer was still at large. I said I didn't like to think that the person who killed Wellington could be living somewhere nearby, and I might meet him when I went out for a walk at night. And this was possible, because a murder was usually committed by a person who was known to the victim. Then I said, Father said I was never to mention Mr. Shear's name in our house again, and that he was an evil man, and maybe that meant he was the person who killed Wellington. And she said, perhaps your father just doesn't like Mr. Shears very much. And I asked, why? And she said, I don't know, Christopher. I don't know because I don't know anything about Mr. Shears. I said, Mr. Shears used to be married to Mrs. Shears, and he left her, like in a divorce. But I don't know if they were actually divorced. And Siobhan said, well, Mrs. Shears is a friend of yours, isn't she? A friend of you and your father. So perhaps your father doesn't like Mr. Shears because he left Mrs. Shears, because he did something bad to someone who's a friend. And I said, but Father says Mrs. Shears isn't a friend of ours anymore. And Siobhan said, I'm sorry, Christopher. I wish I could answer all these questions, but I simply don't know. Then the bell went for the end of school. The next day, I saw four yellow cars in a row on the way to school, which made it a black day. So I didn't eat anything at lunch, and I sat in the corner of the room all day and read my A-level maths course book. And the next day, too, I saw four yellow cars in a row on the way to school, which made it another black day, too. So I didn't speak to anyone, and for the whole afternoon I sat in the corner of the library, groaning, with my head pressed into the join between the two walls, and this made me feel calm and safe. But on the third day, I kept my eyes closed all the way to school until we got off the bus, because after I've had two black days in a row, I'm allowed to do that. Chapter 97. But it wasn't the end of the book, because 5 days later, I saw five red cars in a row, which made it a super good day, and I knew that something special was going to happen. Nothing special happened at school, so I knew that something special was going to happen after school. And when I got home, I went down to the shop at the end of our road to buy some licorice laces and a Milky Bar with my pocket money. And when I'd bought my licorice laces and a Milky Bar, I turned round and saw Mrs. Alexander, the old lady from number 39, who was in the shop as well. She wasn't wearing jeans now. She was wearing a dress like a normal old lady. And she smelt of cooking. She said, what happened to you the other day? I asked, which day? And she said, I came out again and you'd gone. I had to eat all the biscuits myself. I said, I went away. And she said, I gathered that. I said, I thought you might ring the police. And she said, "Why on earth would I do that?" And I said, "Because I was poking my nose into other people's business, and Father said I shouldn't investigate who killed Wellington, and a policeman gave me a caution, and if I get into trouble again, it will be a lot worse because of the caution." Then the Indian lady behind the counter said to Mrs. Alexander, "Can I help you?" And Mrs. Alexander said she'd like a pint of milk and a packet of Jaffa cakes, and I went out of the shop. When I was outside the shop, I saw that Mrs. Alexander's dachshund was sitting on the pavement. It was wearing a little coat made out of tartan material, which is Scottish and Czech. She had tied its lead to the drain pipe next to the door. I like dogs, so I bent down and I said hello to her dog, and it licked my hand. Its tongue was rough and wet, and it liked the smell on my trousers and started sniffing them. Then Mrs. Alexander came outside and said, "His name is Ivor." I didn't say anything. And Mrs. Alexander said, "You're very shy, aren't you, Christopher?" And I said, "I'm not allowed to talk to you." And she said, "Don't worry. I'm not going to tell the police, and I'm not going to tell your father, because there's nothing wrong with having a chat. Having a chat is just being friendly, isn't it?" I said, "I can't do chatting." Then she said, "Do you like computers?" And I said, "Yes, I like computers. I have a computer at home in my bedroom." And she said, "I know. I can see you sitting at your computer in your bedroom sometimes when I look across the street." Then she untied Ivor's lead from the drainpipe. I wasn't going to say anything because I didn't want to get into trouble. Then I thought that this was a super good day, and something special hadn't happened yet, so it was possible that talking to Mrs. Alexander was the special thing that was going to happen. And I thought that she might tell me something about Wellington or about Mr. Shears without me asking her, so that wouldn't be breaking my promise. So I said, "And I like maths and looking after Toby, and also I like outer space and I like being on my own." And she said, "I bet you're very good at maths, aren't you?" And I said, "I am. I'm going to do my A-level maths next month, and I'm going to get an A grade." And Mrs. Alexander said, "Really? A-level maths?" I replied, "Yes, I don't tell lies." And she said, "I apologise. I didn't mean to suggest that you were lying. I just wondered if I'd heard you correctly. I'm a little deaf sometimes." And I said, "I remember you told me." And then I said, "I'm the first person to do an A-level from my school, because it's a special school." And she said, "Well, I'm very impressed, and I hope you do get an A." And I said, "I will." And she said, "And the other thing I know about you is that your favourite colour is not yellow." And I said, "No, and it's not brown either. My favourite colour is red and metal colour." Then Ivor did a poo, and Mrs. Alexander picked it up with her hand inside a little plastic bag, and then she turned the plastic bag inside out and tied a knot in the top, so that the poo was all sealed up, and she didn't touch the poo with her hands. And then I did some reasoning. I reasoned that Father had only made me do a promise about five things, which were: 1. Not to mention Mr. Shears' name in our house. 2. Not to go asking Mrs. Shears about who killed that bloody dog. 3. Not to go asking anyone about who killed that bloody dog. 4. Not to go trespassing into other people's gardens. 5. To stop this ridiculous bloody detective game. And asking about Mr. Shears wasn't any of these things. And if you're a good detective, you have to take risks. And this was a super good day, which meant it was a good day for taking risks. So I said, "Do you know Mr. Shears?" Which was like chatting. And Mrs. Alexander said, "Not really, no. I mean, I knew him well enough to say hello and talk to a little in the street, but I didn't know much about him. I think he worked in a bank, the National Westminster in town." And I said, "Father says that he's an evil man, Do you know why he said that? Is Mr. Shears an evil man? And Mrs. Alexander said, Why are you asking me about Mr. Shears, Christopher? I didn't say anything, because I didn't want to be investigating Wellington's murder, and that was the reason I was asking about Mr. Shears. But Mrs. Alexander said, Is this about Wellington? And I nodded, because that didn't count as being a detective. Mrs. Alexander didn't say anything. She walked to the little red box on a pole next to the gate to the park, and she put Ivor's poo into the box, which was a brown thing inside a red thing which made my head feel funny, so I didn't look. Then she walked back to me. She sucked in a big breath and said, Perhaps it would be best not to talk about these things, Christopher. And I asked, Why not? And she said, Because... Then she stopped and decided to start saying a different sentence. Because maybe your father's right and you shouldn't go around asking questions about this. And I asked, Why? And she said, Because obviously he's going to find it quite upsetting. And I said, Why is he going to find it upsetting? Then she sucked in another big breath and said, Because I think you know why your father doesn't like Mr. Shears very much. Then I asked, Did Mr. Shears kill Mother? And Mrs. Alexander said, Kill her? And I said, Yes. Did he kill Mother? And Mrs. Alexander said, No, of course he didn't kill your mother. And I said, But did he give her stress so that she died of a heart attack? And Mrs. Alexander said, I honestly don't know what you're talking about, Christopher. And I said, Or did he hurt her so that she had to go into hospital? And Mrs. Alexander said, Did she have to go into hospital? And I said, Yes, and it wasn't very serious at first, but she had a heart attack when she was in hospital. And Mrs. Alexander said, Oh, my goodness. I said, And she died. And Mrs. Alexander said, Oh, my goodness, again. And then she said, Oh, Christopher, I'm so, so sorry. I never realised. Then I asked her, Why did you say, I think you know why your father doesn't like Mr. Shears very much? Mrs. Alexander put her hand over her mouth and said, Oh, dear, dear, dear. But she didn't answer my question. So I asked her the same question again, because in a murder mystery novel, when someone doesn't want to answer a question, it's because they're trying to keep a secret or trying to stop someone getting into trouble, which means that the answers to those questions are the most important answers of all, and that's why the detective has to put that person under pressure. But Mrs. Alexander still didn't answer. Instead, she asked me a question. She said, So you don't know? And I said, Don't know what? She replied, Christopher, look, I probably shouldn't be telling you this. Then she said, Perhaps we should take a little walk in the park together. This is not the place to be talking about this kind of thing. I was nervous. I didn't know Mrs. Alexander. I knew that she was an old lady and that she liked dogs, but she was a stranger. And I never go into the park on my own because it's dangerous and people inject drugs behind the public toilets in the corner. I wanted to go home and go up to my room and feed Toby and practice some maths. But I was excited too, because I thought she might tell me a secret, and the secret might be about who killed Wellington, or about Mr. Shears. And if she did that, I might have more evidence against him, or be able to exclude him from my investigations. So because it was a super good day, I decided to walk into the park with Mrs. Alexander, even though it scared me. When we were inside the park, Mrs. Alexander stopped walking and said, I'm going to say something to you. and you must promise not to tell your father that I told you this. I asked, why? And she said, I shouldn't have said what I said. And if I don't explain, you'll carry on wondering what I meant. And you might ask your father. And I don't want you to do that, because I don't want you to upset him. So, I'm going to explain why I said what I said. But before I do that, you have to promise not to tell anyone I said this to you. And I asked, why? And she said, Christopher, please, just trust me. And I said, I promise. Because if Mrs. Alexander told me who killed Wellington, or she told me that Mr. Shears had really killed Mother, I could still go to the police and tell them, because you're allowed to break a promise if someone has committed a crime and you know about it. And Mrs. Alexander said, your mother, before she died, was very good friends with Mr. Shears. And I said, I know. And she said, no, Christopher, I'm not sure that you do. I mean that they were very good friends. Very, very good friends. I thought about this for a while and said, do you mean that they were doing sex? And Mrs. Alexander said, yes, Christopher, that is what I mean. Then she didn't say anything for about 30 seconds. Then she said, I'm sorry, Christopher. I really didn't mean to say anything that was going to upset you. But I wanted to explain why I said what I said. You see, I thought you knew. That's why your father thinks that Mr. Shears is an evil man. And that will be why he doesn't want you going around talking to people about Mr. Shears, because that will bring back bad memories. And I said, was that why Mr. Shears left Mrs. Shears, because he was doing sex with someone else when he was married to Mrs. Shears? And Mrs. Alexander said, yes, I expect so. Then she said, I'm sorry, Christopher, I really am. And I said, I think I should go now. And she said, are you okay, Christopher? And I said, I'm scared of being in the park with you because you're a stranger. And she said, I'm not a stranger, Christopher, I'm a friend. And I said, I'm going to go home now. And she said, if you want to talk about this, you can come and see me any time you want. You only have to knock on my door. And I said, okay. And she said, Christopher? And I said, what? And she said, you won't tell your father about this conversation, will you? And I said, no, I promised. And she said, you go on home, and remember what I said, any time. Then I went home. Chapter 101. Mr. Jevons said that I liked maths because it was safe. He said I liked maths because it meant solving problems, and these problems were difficult and interesting, but there was always a straightforward answer at the end. And what he meant was that maths wasn't like life, because in life there are no straightforward answers at the end. I know he meant this, because this is what he said. This is because Mr. Jevons doesn't understand numbers. Here is a famous story called The Monty Hall Problem, which I've included in this book because it illustrates what I mean. There used to be a column called Ask Marilyn in a magazine called Parade in America. And this column was written by Marilyn Vos Savant, and in the magazine it said that she had the highest IQ in the world in the Guinness Book of World Records Hall of Fame. And in the column, she answered maths questions sent in by readers. And in September 1990, this question was sent in by Craig F. Whittaker of Columbia, Maryland. But it's not what's called a direct quote because I've made it simpler and easier to understand. You're on a game show on television. On this game show, the idea is to win a car as a prize. The game show host shows you three doors. He says that there is a car behind one of the doors and there are goats behind the other two doors. He asks you to pick a door. You pick a door, but the door is not opened. Then, the game show host opens one of the doors you didn't pick to show you a goat, because he knows what is behind the doors. Then, he says that you have one final chance to change your mind before the doors are opened and you get a car or a goat. So he asks you if you want to change your mind and pick the other unopened door instead. What should you do? Marilyn Vos Savant said that you should always change and pick the final door because the chances are 2 in 3 that there will be a car behind that door. But if you use your intuition, you think that chance is 50-50 because you think there's an equal chance that the car is behind any door. Lots of people wrote to the magazine to say that Marilyn Vos Savant was wrong, even when she explained very carefully why she was right. 92% of the letters she got about the problem said that she was wrong, and lots of these were from mathematicians and scientists. Here are some of the things that they said. I'm very concerned with the general public's lack of mathematical skills. Please help by confessing your error. Robert Sachs, PhD, George Mason University. There is enough mathematical illiteracy in this country, and we don't need the world's highest IQ propagating more. Shame. Scott Smith, PhD, University of Florida. I am in shock that after being corrected by at least 3 mathematicians, you still do not see your mistake. Kent Ford, Dickinson State University. I am sure you will receive many letters from high school and college students. Perhaps you should keep a few addresses for help with future columns. W. Robert Smith, PhD, Georgia State University. You are utterly incorrect. How many irate mathematicians are needed to get you to change your mind? E. Ray Bobo, PhD, Georgetown University. If all those PhDs were wrong, the country would be in very serious trouble. Everett Harmon, PhD, U.S. Army Research Institute. But Marilyn Vos Savant was right. And there are 2 ways you can show this. Firstly, you can do it by maths with an equation. The second way you can work it out is by stating all the possible outcomes, like this. You are asked to choose a door. You choose a door with a goat behind it. You stick, you get a goat. You change, you get a car. Or, you choose another door with a goat behind it. You stick, you get a goat. You change, you get a car. Or, you choose a door with a car behind it. You stick, you get a car. You change, you get a goat. So, if you change, 2 times out of 3, you get a car. And if you stick, you only get a car 1 time out of 3. And this shows that intuition can sometimes get things wrong. And intuition is what people use in life to make decisions. But logic can help you work out the right answer. It also shows that Mr. Jevons was wrong, and numbers are sometimes very complicated and not very straightforward at all. And that's why I like the Monty Hall problem. Chapter 103. When I got home, Rodri was there. Rodri is the man who works for Father, helping him do heating maintenance and boiler repair. And he sometimes comes round to the house in the evening to drink beer with Father and watch the television and have a conversation. Rodri was wearing a pair of white dungarees which had dirty marks all over them, and he had a gold ring on the middle finger of his left hand, and he smelt of something I don't know the name of, which Father often smells of when he comes home from work. I put my licorice laces and my Milky Bar in my special food box on the shelf which Father's not allowed to touch because it's mine. Then Father said, "And what have you been up to, young man?" And I said, "I went to the shop to get some licorice laces and a Milky Bar." And he said, "You were a long time." And I said, "I talked to Mrs. Alexander's dog outside the shop, and I stroked him and he sniffed my trousers." Which was another white lie. Then Rodri said to me, God, you do get the third degree, don't you? But I didn't know what the third degree was. And he said, So, how you doing, Captain? And I said, I'm doing very well, thank you, which is what you're meant to say. And he said, What's 251 times 864? And I thought about this, and I said, 216,864. Because it was a really easy sum, because you just multiply 864 times 1,000, which is 864,000. Then you divide it by 4, which is 216,000, and that's 250 times 864. Then you just add another 864 onto it to get 251 times 864, and that's 216,864. And I said, Is that right? And Rodri said, I haven't got a bloody clue. And he laughed. I don't like it when Rodri laughs at me. Rodri laughs at me a lot. Father says it's being friendly. Then Father said, I'll stick one of those Gobi Aloo Sag things in the oven for you, okay? This is because I like Indian food, because it has a strong taste. But Gobi Aloo Sag is yellow, so I put red food colouring into it before I eat it, and I keep a little plastic bottle of this in my special food box. And I said, okay. And Rodri said, So, it looks like Parky stitched them up then? But this was to Father, not to me. And Father said, Well, those circuit boards look like they come out the bloody ark. And Rodri said, You going to tell them? And Father said, What's the point? They're hardly going to take him to court, are they? And Rodri said, That'll be the day. And Father said, Best to let sleeping dogs lie, I reckon. Then I went into the garden. Siobhan said that when you're writing a book, you have to include some descriptions of things. I said that I could take photographs and put them in the book, but she said the idea of a book was to describe things using words so that people could read them and make a picture in their own head. And she said it was best to describe things that were interesting or different. She also said that I should describe people in the story by mentioning one or two details about them, so that people could make a picture of them in their head, which is why I wrote about Mr. Jevons' shoes with all the holes in them, and the policeman who looked as if he had two mice in his nose, and the thing Rodri smelled of, but I didn't know the name for. So I decided to do a description of the garden. But the garden wasn't very interesting or different. It was just a garden, with grass and a shed and a clothesline. But the sky was interesting and different, because usually skies look boring because they're all blue or all grey or all covered in one pattern of clouds, and they don't look like they're hundreds of miles above your head. They look like someone might have painted them on a big roof. But this sky had lots of different types of clouds in it at different heights, so you could see how big it was, and this made it look enormous. Furthest away in the sky were lots of little white clouds, which looked like fish scales or sand dunes, which had a very regular pattern. Then, next furthest away, and to the west, were some big clouds, which were coloured slightly orange, because it was nearly evening and the sun was going down. Then, closest to the ground, was a huge cloud which was coloured grey, because it was a rain cloud, and it was a big, pointy shape. And when I looked at it for a long time, I could see it moving very slowly, and it was like an alien spaceship, hundreds of kilometres long, like in Dune, or Blake 7, or Close Encounters of the Third Kind, except that it wasn't made of solid material, it was made of droplets of condensed water vapour, which is what clouds are made of. And it could have been an alien spaceship. People think that alien spaceships would be solid and made of metal and have lights all over them and move slowly through the sky, because that's how we'd build a spaceship if we were able to build one that big. But aliens, if they exist, would probably be very different from us. They might look like big slugs, or be flat like reflections. Or they might be bigger than planets. Or they might not have bodies at all. They might just be information, like in a computer, and their spaceships might look like clouds or be made up of unconnected objects like dust or leaves. Then I listened to the sounds in the garden, and I could hear a bird singing, and I could hear traffic noise, which was like the surf on a beach, and I could hear someone playing music somewhere and children shouting. And in between these noises, if I listened very carefully and stood completely still, I could hear a tiny whining noise inside my ears and the air going in and out of my nose. Then I sniffed the air to see if I could see what the air in the garden smelled like. But I couldn't smell anything. It smelled of nothing. And this was interesting too. Then I went inside and fed Toby. Chapter 107. The Hound of the Baskervilles is my favourite book. In The Hound of the Baskervilles, Sherlock Holmes and Dr. Watson get a visit from James Mortimer, who is a doctor from the moors in Devon. James Mortimer's friend, Sir Charles Baskerville, has died of a heart attack, and James Mortimer thinks that he might have been scared to death. James Mortimer also has an ancient scroll which describes the curse of the Baskervilles. On this scroll, it says that Sir Charles Baskerville had an ancestor called Sir Hugo Baskerville, who was a wild, profane and godless man, and he tried to do sex with the daughter of a yeoman, but she escaped, and he chased her across the moor, and his friends, who were daredevil roisterers, chased after him. And when they found him, the daughter of the yeoman had died of exhaustion and fatigue, and they saw a great black beast shaped like a hound, yet larger than any hound that ever mortal eye has rested on, and this hound was tearing the throat out of Sir Hugo Baskerville. And one of the friends died of fear that very night, and the other two were broken men for the rest of their days. James Mortimer thinks that the Hound of the Baskervilles might have scared Sir Charles to death, and he's worried that his son and heir, Sir Henry Baskerville, will be in danger when he goes to the hall in Devon. So Sherlock Holmes sends Dr. Watson to Devon with Sir Henry Baskerville and James Mortimer, and Dr. Watson tries to work out who might have killed Sir Charles Baskerville, and Sherlock Holmes says that he will stay in London, but he travels to Devon secretly and does investigations of his own. And Sherlock Holmes finds out that Sir Charles was killed by a neighbour called Stapleton, who's a butterfly collector and a distant relation of the Baskervilles. And Stapleton is poor, so he tries to kill Sir Henry Baskerville so that he'll inherit the hall. In order to do this, he's brought a huge dog from London and covered it in phosphorus to make it glow in the dark, and it was this dog which scared Sir Charles Baskerville to death. And Sherlock Holmes and Watson and Lestrade from Scotland Yard catch him. And Sherlock Holmes and Watson shoot the dog, which is one of the dogs which gets killed in the story, which isn't nice because it's not the dog's fault. And Stapleton escapes into the Grimpen Mire, which is part of the moor, and he dies because he's sucked into a bog. There are some bits of the story I don't like. One bit is the ancient scroll, because it's written in old language which is difficult to understand, like this. Learn then from this story not to fear the fruits of the past, but rather to be circumspect in the future, that those foul passions whereby our family has suffered so grievously may not again be loosed to our undoing. And sometimes Sir Arthur Conan Doyle, who's the author, describes people like this. There was something subtly wrong with the face, some coarseness of expression, some hardness, perhaps, of eye, some looseness of lip which marred its perfect beauty. And I don't know what some hardness, perhaps, of eye means, and I'm not interested in faces. But sometimes it is fun not knowing what the words mean, because you can look them up in a dictionary, like goyal, which is a deep dip, or tors, which are hills or rocky heights. I like The Hound of the Baskervilles because it's a detective story, which means that there are clues and red herrings. These are some of the clues. 1. Two of Sir Henry Baskerville's boots go missing when he's staying at a hotel in London. This means that someone wants to give them to the Hound of the Baskervilles to smell like a bloodhound so that it can chase him. This means that the Hound of the Baskervilles is not a supernatural being, but a real dog. 2. Stapleton is the only person who knows how to get through the Grimpen Mire, and he tells Watson to stay out of it for his own safety. This means that he's hiding something in the middle of the Grimpen Mire and doesn't want